On Friday, June 12, 2026, SpaceX is expected to launch what will likely be the largest initial public offering in history. And if you turn on any financial television network that morning, you are going to see a total fixation on the rocket. Analysts will be debating valuations, retail investors will be modeling Starlink revenue, and billions of dollars will change hands.
Right. But the true winner of that massive IPO isn't Elon Musk, and it certainly isn't the retail investor.
Exactly. The profound structural reality of this event lies entirely elsewhere. I mean, it lies with a completely invisible toll collector who hasn't spent a single dime on rocket fuel.
That is the real mechanism at work here. Our objective for this deep dive is to look completely past the spectacle of the IPO itself. We really need to analyze the underlying architecture of structural monopolies in our modern financial system.
Right. And to do that, we are drawing from an extensive article in the Averaging Up collection, which focuses specifically on index providers. Primarily, you know, we're talking about S&P Global and MSCI. The goal is to dissect how these entities have managed to build fortresses at the absolute center of global capital allocation.
And to understand the power dynamics of a massive event like the SpaceX IPO, we actually have to ignore the financial media entirely. We need to look at the political reaction.
Yeah, which brings us to a recent letter drafted by Senator Elizabeth Warren. She raised some serious concerns about the inclusion of enormous technology companies into major indices. She specifically names SpaceX, OpenAI, and Anthropic.
Right, but the crucial detail is the address on that envelope. I mean, Senator Warren did not write to the founders of those companies. She didn't write to the venture capitalists. And she didn't even write to the underwriting banks managing the public offerings.
Wait, she bypassed the underwriters entirely?
She did. She directed her scrutiny entirely toward S&P Dow Jones Indices and MSCI. She demanded to know if they had altered their inclusion rules under pressure from these massive private firms seeking entry into the public markets.
That feels entirely counterintuitive. I mean, if you are a regulator concerned about the sheer scale and influence of a company like SpaceX, why bypass the founder? What gives these list makers such immense power that they warrant a senatorial inquiry over the actual creators of the technology?
Well, we have to break down a fundamental myth about how the stock market actually operates to answer that. We need to examine the mechanical reality of what occurs the moment a behemoth like SpaceX is added to an index like the S&P 500.
The article in the Averaging Up collection terms this the rebalancing illusion, right?
Yes, exactly. Most people operate under the assumption that when a massive, highly valued company joins an index fund, let's use Vanguard's VOO as our standard example, that the fund inherently gains new value.
I will admit that is exactly how I always pictured it. You know, the assumption is that you are injecting a rapidly growing, highly profitable aerospace company into the index. So the funds tracking that index should naturally absorb that positive momentum and go up in value.
It is a logical assumption, but it is entirely an illusion. A rebalancing event is not a creation of value. When SpaceX officially enters the S&P 500, every single passive fund tracking that index is structurally mandated to buy SpaceX shares. They have absolutely no choice in the matter.
But they do not receive those shares at a discount or through some special allocation, right? They must acquire them at the fully realized market price.
Precisely. They merely execute a swap. Mm-hmm. To buy those incoming SpaceX shares at market price, the fund must either deploy holding cash or sell off an exiting position. Perhaps they sell a smaller company that is being booted from the S&P 500 to make room.
So the investor holding VOO simply sees a new constituent appear in their portfolio. They do not experience a sudden windfall of new capital. The fund just exchanged one asset for another at fair market value.
Exactly. So the retail investor isn't getting a windfall. But the reality is someone is cashing in on this inclusion, and that brings us to the toll.
Right, the toll. When a company with the valuation of SpaceX joins the S&P 500, the total assets under management, the AUM, tracking that index, swells significantly. Just to clarify for everyone, AUM is simply the total market value of all the investments a fund manages.
And the index providers, S&P Global and MSCI, collect a licensing fee measured in basis points on that total AUM.
And those basis points, you know, each being 0.01%, they sound minuscule until you apply them to trillions of dollars. S&P Global and MSCI are effectively acting as poll booth operators on a mandatory highway.
That is a great analogy. They do not manufacture the vehicles, they do not pour the asphalt, and they certainly do not pay for the fuel. They simply collect a fraction of a cent for every unit of traffic that passes through.
But hold on, the highway analogy only works if the maintenance costs are low. S&P Global must have massive infrastructure costs to process something as complex as a SpaceX inclusion. I mean, you are talking about moving billions of dollars of allocated capital.
That is actually the most remarkable aspect of this business model. The toll collects at zero marginal cost.
Literally zero.
Functionally zero. S&P Global does not underwrite the stock, they do not build the rockets, and they do not execute the trades. They merely update a list.
Oh, I see. So when the AUM swells by billions of dollars due to the inclusion of SpaceX, the licensing fee mathematically increases on that new increment.
Right, without the index provider spending an additional dime to service it. The rocket launches, the passive funds execute their swaps, and the toll gets paid.
Well, if operating this toll booth is that lucrative and it genuinely requires near zero marginal cost to maintain, the obvious question is why we don't see massive competition. I mean, if I am Vanguard or State Street and I am paying millions in licensing fees to S&P Global every year, why don't I just build my own alternative road? I could create the Vanguard 500 list and bypass the toll completely.
You could try, but it wouldn't work because the index is not a product. It is a standard.
A standard.
Yes. That distinction forms the ultimate economic moat. The switching costs protecting S&P Global and MSCI are not financial. They are deeply institutional. They are embedded in inertia, convention, and rigorous regulation.
So it's like a standardized shipping container. You cannot simply invent a slightly better box and expect the global shipping industry to rebuild their cranes, ports, and cargo ships to accommodate it. The infrastructure is built around the standard.
That is exactly it.
Yeah.
The S&P 500 is embedded into the language of finance. When a financial journalist reports that the market had a strong day, they don't have to clarify they mean the S&P 500. It is implicit.
And corporate compensation contracts work the same way, right? If a CEO's bonus is tied to outperforming the benchmark, that benchmark is legally defined as an S&P or MSCI index.
It goes much deeper than corporate bonuses. It dictates the behavior of institutional capital. Consider a state pension fund writing its investment mandate. If their board decides to allocate 20% of their portfolio to large-cap domestic equities, their legal documents do not just vaguely say large American companies.
They explicitly reference a specific index by name.
Yes, and changing that legal reference is not just some simple administrative update.
I imagine it's a monumental bureaucratic undertaking.
It requires board approval, fiduciary consent, and entirely new regulatory filings. A portfolio manager cannot wake up on a Tuesday and decide to switch to a cheaper competing list.
Plus, the entire global financial derivatives market is inextricably tied to the specific architecture. Futures contracts traded at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange are written directly on the S&P 500.
Right. A vast ecosystem of options, structured products, and ETFs all reference these precise indices. You cannot launch a competing standard for the same reason you cannot introduce a competing unit of measurement for the kilometer.
I understand the gravity of the standard, but I want to press on this. We are talking about the largest asset managers in the world. Vanguard, BlackRock, State Street, they manage tens of trillions of dollars combined.
Right.
Could they theoretically form a consortium, pool their resources, and build a shared open source benchmark to escape these fees? Or is the regulatory infrastructure just too thick?
It is a rigorous theoretical scenario, but the institutional gravity is simply too immense to escape. I mean, even if that consortium created a mathematically flawless free alternative, they would still face an insurmountable task.
Convincing the entire global system to switch over.
Exactly. Convincing thousands of independent pension boards, sovereign wealth funds, and international regulatory bodies to rewrite their decades-old mandates and legal contracts, it is an impossible coordination problem.
And this reality highlights the brilliance of MSCI, which operates this exact architecture globally, but almost entirely out of the public eye. It is fascinating because retail investors debate the S&P 500 endlessly on social media, but you rarely hear MSCI mentioned outside of institutional circles.
Yet they dictate the flow of international capital.
They absolutely do. If a sovereign wealth fund in Norway or a massive pension system in Japan wants to deploy capital into emerging markets, frontier markets, or specific ESG initiatives, they do not manually pick stocks.
Right. They allocate directly to an MSCI index. The mandate is written, and the toll is permanently embedded. It is invisible, structural, and entirely unavoidable.
So we have established an insurmountable moat protecting a zero marginal cost business. The article in the Averaging Up collection categorizes this highly efficient business geometry using a framework called the Free Surfer.
Yes, the Free Surfer framework. Let's break down how this actually functions, because it completely subverts the standard corporate growth model.
Well, most conventional businesses must aggressively purchase their growth. They incur massive capital expenditures, they fund research and development, they execute marketing campaigns. Every dollar of revenue growth costs a certain amount of capital to produce.
It is a mechanical process, fiercely competed for, and always uncertain. But the free surfer paradigm is completely different. The article defines it with a specific equation, A multiplied by B.
Where A represents the choke point, in our case, the specific index standard, and B represents the wave, which is passivization.
Right, and this refers to the relentless, decades-long migration of capital away from active stock picking and into passive index tracking.
The dynamic is truly extraordinary. The toll booth sits at the structural choke point. The wave, the capital flow, arrives entirely from the outside at absolutely no cost to the business itself.
S&P Global does not spend a single dollar to convince the global financial system to migrate into passive vehicles. The world simply delivers that secular growth to them. It is external, it is structural, and it requires zero internal effort.
But the architecture goes a step further. The article introduces a secondary layer called the double swell. The formula expands from A multiplied by B to A multiplied by B1 and B2. These two waves actively feed into each other.
Yes, B1 remains passivization, but B2 represents AI automation.
How do AI agents factor into a passive index, exactly?
This is where the structural monopoly becomes self-reinforcing. When you task an artificial intelligence agent with portfolio automation and capital allocation, it naturally defaults to index-based strategies.
Because of the structure. Indices are machine-readable, mathematically rigid, and inherently low friction.
Precisely. An AI agent is not going to read a CEO's biography to make a qualitative judgment. It is going to ingest structured index data. Therefore, every time an AI automates a portfolio, it effectively casts a vote for passive investing.
Okay, so the second wave AI automation directly accelerates that first wave of passivization.
Yes. And as that massive influx of capital continues to flood into passive vehicles, the institutional demand for complex analytics, risk decomposition, and factor scoring grows exponentially. That demand is increasingly served by machines, creating a perpetual loop.
Both MSCI and S&P Global have deliberately engineered their operations to capture this double swell, but they do it through different coupling mechanisms.
MSCI couples its growth through the market substrate itself. As automation continuously feeds passive investing, the institutions demand more rigorous analytics to understand their exposures. MSCI provides those analytics, effectively locking the institutional capital even tighter into its ecosystem.
Right, so they own both the index and the analytics required to understand the index. S&P Global, however, couples its growth through data distribution. Explain that distribution angle, because the article details their integrations with AI platforms like Cohere.
Yes, connected through a retrieval infrastructure built by S&P's subsidiary, Kensho.
Right. So what does it actually mean for an AI to consume data programmatically?
It means removing the human analyst from the terminal entirely. S&P Global is structuring its vast troves of financial data so that AI models can ingest it directly machine to machine.
And when an AI agent consumes this data programmatically to run a portfolio, it generates licensing revenue for S&P Global.
Exactly. S&P then uses that high margin revenue to build wider data pipes, making their analytics even more accessible to more AI platforms, which in turn generates even more licensing revenue.
It's almost like operating a massive self-winding horological mechanism, or, you know, a hydroelectric dam where you didn't have to build the river and you don't have to pump the water. The external movements of the market passivization and the technological shifts AI automation act as the relentless water flow. All S&P Global has to do is sit there and own the turbine.
That's exactly right. The SpaceX IPO perfectly illustrates this mechanism. When SpaceX joins the index, it doesn't merely push massive volume through the passive choke point. It simultaneously generates vast amounts of new market data that these AI agents must immediately process and ingest to adjust their models. It activates both turbines at once.
But an engine of this magnitude, one that generates compounding revenue at zero marginal cost, inevitably attracts systemic friction. This brings us right back to our starting point.
Senator Warren's letter.
Yes. Regulators are not blind to this. We have to address this political constraint impartially, just looking at the facts. The scrutiny from lawmakers is part of a very predictable historical pattern. Whenever a choke point dictates the flow of trillions of dollars, the government inevitably steps in.
The pattern is well established. We can look at a very clear precedent, the 2010 Durbin Amendment. This was a piece of legislation specifically designed as a regulatory clampdown on the structural monopolies of Visa and MasterCard.
The amendment legally capped the swipe fees that these networks could charge on debit transactions, so the government explicitly stepped in to limit the toll.
They did. Yet, if you look at Visa's revenue and stock performance, in the decade following the Durbin Amendment, it multiplied significantly.
How does a company thrive when the government legally restricts their primary fee structure?
Because of the underlying secular wave, political scrutiny and regulatory intervention might successfully compress the toll per unit. You know, they might force Visa to charge fewer basis points on a specific transaction, but they cannot stop the secular wave of global commerce digitizing.
Ah, so the total volume of transactions passing through the gate continued to explode.
Exactly. If you take a slightly thinner toll and multiply it by a massively larger wave of volume, the resulting revenue is still exponentially higher.
That leads to a fascinating analytical deduction. Regulatory intervention, rather than dismantling a monopoly, often inadvertently cements its permanence. By attempting to regulate the exact fee structure of the choke point, the government effectively acknowledges that the infrastructure is permanent and unavoidable.
The regulation becomes a seal of structural inevitability. The toll always survives the letter.
The political constraint simply acts as a narrowing of the pipe. It might cause temporary friction, but the immense pressure of the secular wave, whether that is the digitization of payments or the passivization of capital, merely pushes more volume through that narrowed space. The infrastructure remains untouched.
Right. Let's synthesize the overarching pattern here. When we look at the impending SpaceX IPO or the rise of any massive technology company, we tend to focus on the spectacular growth and the market frenzy. But building the underlying standard of the market is far more durable.
It makes me think of the early days of the internet, or even the California gold rush. Countless companies spent billions trying to build the most popular website or mine the most gold, taking on massive speculative risk.
But the enduring fortunes were made by the companies laying the fiber optic backbone and establishing the TCP/IP protocols. Or, to use the gold rush analogy, the merchants selling the shovels and blue jeans. They didn't care which prospector struck gold. They just collected the fee for the tools.
S&P Global and MSCI are operating the fiber optic backbone of global capital. The company's going public, the rockets are taking on the operational risk, the competitive risk, and the market volatility. S&P Global and MSCI provide the structural infrastructure that the entire financial system is mathematically required to use.
The ultimate lesson from the averaging up collection is clear. The most efficient position is not to be a constituent within the index. The superior position is to own the index itself.
It requires a complete paradigm shift in how you view market events. You stop watching the rocket and you start watching the gate.
Exactly.
As we conclude this deep dive, I want to leave you, the listener, with a final provocative thought regarding the future of this architecture. As global capital allocation becomes completely passivized, and as the actual execution of trades becomes entirely driven by AI automation relying strictly on these machine-readable lists,
right.
Who ultimately defines what has economic value in our society? Is it still the free market, driven by human consensus, friction, and price discovery? Or is it simply the algorithmic methodology maintaining the standard?
That is the profound structural reality we are rapidly approaching. When the machine relies entirely on the list, the author of the list dictates the market.
This content is educational and reflects a personal analytical framework. It does not constitute investment advice. Visit averagingup.com to explore the full collection.